recorded live.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Fantasy Hockey X. I'm your host, Chris Wassel. At least it might sound like Chris Wassel. We're not really sure. Either way, we got a 10-game schedule on for Thursday night. We're doing it tonight, as we always do, to preview the usually busy Thursday slate. Tomorrow is no exception. A lot of good games on the docket, even if Vegas doesn't think as much on them as we do. As always, joining me is Michael Clifford and Christopher Pacheco. Good evening, guys.
Evening, fellas.
Evening, gents.
All right, first off, guys, I would like to say that Curtis McElhinney still sucks, unfortunately. And, yeah, it's really that bad if you look at that game. And if you look at one thing from the Columbus game that I'm interested to see, tomorrow night is the fallout from the Zach Werenski, and I'll put this in quotes, scratching, undisclosed. That's what it was deemed by the Columbus media. Scratched, undisclosed. That was it. Nothing more, nothing less. No one knows if it's an injury. But know that Columbus, by the way, does play Thursday as well. So, yeah, back end of a back-to-back, and they go into Pittsburgh, where it hasn't gone particularly well for them. Something I am reading, guys, and I don't know how true this is, Bobrovsky's injured again?
I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen anything like that.
Yeah, something weird is going on, because several of the betting sites picked up on this, that Bobrovsky is injured in some way or form, because they have him listed as doubtful for tomorrow. Even now, that doesn't sound right. I know.
Well, given the way he's performed late, honestly, it would not surprise me if he was hiding some sort of injury or minor injury or whatnot. But in terms of the news that I'm seeing, I'm not seeing that on my screen
yeah.
right now. But you're probably right, Wassel.
Yeah, there's something weird going on. I personally think it's meant for tonight, honestly, and the sites just aren't updating and up, you know, like sort of just rolling it through. So, you know, again, it's one of those wait to see on Thursday what happens. Obviously, doesn't pay for tomorrow, at least. But Austin Matthews is indeed listed as out. So in your fantasy season long leagues, you can put him on your IR at long last and have some relative comfort knowing. Like we said, there's 10 games in all. We're just going to hop right into these. First off and foremost, it is the game of potentially no or little goaltending. The Anaheim Ducks travel to Brooklyn. Hey, soon we won't be able to say that anymore. To face the New York Islanders. One side note, Ryan Kessler, as I had said previously, there was no way in hell Kessler was coming back by Christmas. And sure enough, as Eric Stevens reported today, Kessler, in the next couple weeks, he is progressing very slowly. Actually, what was told to me by Helene Elliott. Literally, in that voice, Mike, it's one of those that you have to listen to once. When she says anything in a slow monotone voice, you do have to laugh. Otherwise, she will kill you. But the obvious lines remain status quo for Anaheim. The Islanders are there is no words for the mess that I saw against Detroit on Tuesday night. Literally none. There's no doubt that the Islanders can score. Everybody knows that. But they are now giving up an even 3.5 goals per game. That is dead last in the frickin' NHL. Dead last. I mean, you know, there's ouch, and then there's just mega ouch. And in this case, it's not just the goaltending. I know some fans are saying, oh, it's absolutely the goaltending. Summer trying to defend the goaltending. It's the whole entire team defense, and it seems to be that the Islanders play well for a little while, and then it goes south in a hurry, and it doesn't help that they have one of the league's worst power penalty kills at all. I guess a good thing for them is Anaheim doesn't score all that much. You know, they score 2.5 goals a game on the road. They score laughably right about the same at home, so it's a pretty consistent total. And over the last 5 games, nothing has really stood out, and they've lost 3 straight on top of it. I mean, it's the obvious. How high will New York Islanders 1 be owned? Because last night, I mean, I saw 20, even 30% plus. Just depended on which GPP you played. All right, Mike. Here's the burning question. I'm not touching the goaltending. Other than maybe Gibson in some crazy risk play. Do I instead try something different with, say, maybe Anaheim's power play unit?
Yeah, I mean, for goaltending, you know, I wouldn't touch the Islanders. You know, when people, I was talking to some people on Tuesday about the slate, and they said they thought that Thomas Greiss was going to be chalked. Like, I almost threw up all over my keyboard. Like, I couldn't believe it. Like, their goaltending should never be chalked. But anyways, yeah, I'm with you on Gibson. Like you said, there will be a ton of ownership on the Islanders top line Tuesday night. I think in the $33 the line change on DK, they were 19% or something like that. Meanwhile, the second line was all in single digits, or mostly in single digits. So if you want to go against that ownership, you know, Gibson, he's legitimately one of the best goalies in the league. He should see a ton of volume. Pretty cheap on DK. He's only 7,200. $600 cheaper than Greiss and Halak. So if Anaheim wins this game, it's probably going to be on Gibson's back. So that makes a ton of sense to me. But what stood out to me in this game is going to be that Islanders second line. There's a lot of top lines I like on the slate tonight. We'll get to them. I think it's worth fading the Islanders top line just because of all the ownership. I don't, you know, they don't really get hard matched all that often, but they do see a lot of first and second lines. And obviously, with Getzlaff back, you kind of want to avoid Getzlaff and Lindholm. You know, if you look at the numbers for the Ducks this year, on and off the ice with Getzlaff and Lindholm, it's just complete night and day. Like, they're actually a good team when those two are on the ice, and when they're off the ice, you know, they're worse than Buffalo. So I think what I'd want to do is go with the second line, go with the lower ownership. You know, you can add in Letty if you want. Then you have Letty and Barzal for that top power play unit. Ducks do take a lot of penalties. You know, you alluded to how many goals the Islanders are giving up this year, and it makes me want to get a piece of Anaheim here. Cam Fowler's fine to use, obviously, because he does log so many minutes, especially on the power play. I just don't know who to use from Anaheim. You know, I was looking over the game logs, and Ryan Getzlaff, he played with 5 different wingers in that game. So, yep. You know, do you use Raquel? Do you use Kasha? Do you use Richie? Do you use Kevin Roy? Like, you just don't know who to use them with. So I think, you know, if you want to use Fowler as a one-off, if you want to use, you know, even Raquel or something like that as a one-off, I'm fine with that. I just don't know if I can stack anything from Anaheim. So I can say probably if I use anything from Anaheim, it'll probably just be Gibson to go against some of the Islanders' ownership. But I really do like that the second line.
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement with Mike's analysis here. I have quite a bit of interest on the Islanders' second line. I think their price tags remain very reasonable over on DraftKings. And, of course, Andrew Ladd being priced the way he is at $3,400 almost on a nightly basis. I actually don't remember the last time he cracked like 4K on the season, but that's either near nor there. The price tags on them are really affordable. I think it's a line that you can use in both cash games and GPPs, whether you want to grab a couple of the guys there or just the full line. I would definitely consider that in a tournament. The top line of the Islanders, there's like absolutely nothing wrong with it. It's just a matter of they're probably going to be chalky given the way that they performed of late. But the challenge I'm having there is ownership and price tag. All of those guys now are priced essentially where they need to be. Josh Bailey is up to $6,400. I can't even believe that. But then you look at his actual statistics on the year. He has 42 points in 34 games, and then it makes sense why he's priced the way he is. So now that they're getting pricey, you know, and chalky, I think it makes sense to push that fade button in tournaments. In a cash game, I can understand if you wanted to grab, you know, one or two of them, but I might just go the salary relief route with a second line. Similarly to what Mike said, I also have interest on the Anaheim side. I just don't know what I want to do like right now, but you look at some of the individual price tags on these guys. Getzlaf, 5,400. Raquel Silverberg, really affordable price tags. If you wanted to stack the second line for the Ducks, that would be the Henrique line. Very affordable to go that route, and it's not a route that's going to carry a lot of ownership. I think that's a really good one in GBP, and I think with Gibson being priced the way he is, he's $7,200 on DraftKings. That's also unlikely going to be a route that has a lot of ownership in a GPP. So it's not, none of these guys are really core pieces for me in cash games, but I think their price tags are really good on DraftKings. And Gibson for $7,200, I mean, it's more of a contrarian play because he's on the road, but I like him. I like him in a GPP. I think he usually sees a really strong shot volume, and I would expect the same thing going into tomorrow night. And as Mike alluded to, if the Ducks actually end up winning this game, I would think he has a large part in the say. So I really like him as a contrarian goalie in tournaments tomorrow.
Yeah, it's kind of the feeling of what I may go with tomorrow, in the ultimate of craziness. By the way, last night I am also glad that I managed to avoid the Winnipeg-Nashville goalie matchup of death, because apparently between that and Halak, that claimed about 30% of ownership in quite a few GPPs. I mean, it was a death match of epic proportion. So just to keep that in mind. Speaking of Winnipeg, you know, Winnipeg, who survived just what was one of the most entertaining games all season last night against Nashville, now gets to travel to Boston to face the Bruins. Yeah. You know, this is, look, Boston is Boston. I mean, basically, if you throw out the zombie-like performance against New York, Boston's actually had four pretty good games over the last five. Yeah, they've looked pretty good at home for the most part. They score a good bit. They average almost 3.2 goals per game at home. Their power play is around 22% at home, which is okay. However, Winnipeg's road power play is almost 25%. Yeah. And I know Winnipeg's high danger chances allowed on the PK are like the fifth worst in the league still. But God, there's so many ways to go with this game, and there's so many ways that it could completely dud. My simple fear, guys, is if I fade this game, it's going to literally just blow up my entire slate. And yet, there's a part of me that just wants to look away from it and run. Are there a few pieces, Chris, that I can look at and try to salvage this so I don't completely fade or fear of missing out?
Certainly. especially in GPP. I think the Winnipeg second line is very, very interesting in that format. I would think that the Scheifele line on the road is going to have to deal a lot with Bergeron tomorrow night, and that is a matchup that I just don't want a part of. So I think the clear route here is going with the Winnipeg second line. That would be Brian Little's line with line A and Ehlers next to him on the wings. I think those are the plays in a tournament format. They're going to see a lot of the depth lines for Boston. The way to attack Boston, if you play, you know, if you want to target against them, is to go, you know, towards their depth lines, not try to attack that Bergeron line. And, you know, you look at the possession numbers and the defensive numbers for any of the lines outside of the Bergeron line, and it's a really steep drop off. So I feel comfortable with Winnipeg 2 in tournaments. I don't expect much ownership there because in terms of a macro matchup, Boston is never a really good one, especially at home where they get to dictate matchups a little bit better. So without much ownership, I think I'm inclined to play them in tournaments tomorrow night.
Yeah, I mean, the Winnipeg top line, like Chris said, is just, it's just a complete fade for me. What's interesting is that if you look at the Nashville game, is that Nick Ehlers spent a lot of time on the top line, and they moved Kyle Connor down to the second line with Little and line A. Don't know if they're going to do that. I mean, if they have a morning skate Thursday morning, we'll find out then. It would kind of change things for me because I'm with Chris. I'd have interest in Winnipeg's second line, but if Connor is playing with Little and line A, then it really kind of disinterests me. Like, I like Connor, but he's definitely the beneficiary playing with two elite players in Scheifele and Wheeler. And then if you go down to play with Little and line A, like, I like line A a lot. I don't know how much you can drive the play outside of, you know, one time in on the power play, which he's obviously already one of the best of the league at. So if Connor's on that second line, I'll probably just fade Winnipeg altogether because I'm not taking a line that's matching against Bergeron. That's just, you know, that's just burning money. On the flip side, I do kind of like the idea of using the Bergeron line. Winnipeg still, you know, they still have a brutal penalty kill. They still take a fair number of penalties. Now, I mean, they're not, you know, among the league leaders like they were last year, but they're still, you know, definitely in the bottom third for taking penalties and giving power play opportunities. So I have no problem full stacking the Boston top line because as good as the Winnipeg top line is, they do give up some chances. Trouba and Morrissey are a good pairing, but, like, I don't know if you can call them a true shutdown pairing. I mean, it's not like you're facing Giordano and Hamilton from Calgary or something like that. So I think there's a route here where Boston can put up some goals. So I think the only thing for me out of this game would be some consideration on the Boston top line. Other than that, I'll probably just end up full fading this game, expecting something of a low scoring game. Or, you know, maybe some sparse goal scoring from players that won't really be owned and won't affect me that much. So for me, it'll be Boston top line or nothing.
Yeah, it's kind of the feeling I'm getting here. I'm hoping I'm right, and just praying that Tuukka Rask doesn't completely utterly implode. Like, I'm have this back of the hair sort of fear. Either way, next up. Speaking of the John Tortorella conundrum of conundrums, the Columbus Blue Jackets, who look pretty good tonight so far, travel to Pittsburgh to face the Pittsburgh Penguins. By the way, Columbus through two periods has still allowed 25 shots to a Toronto team that's missing a few people, including, you know, some guy named Austin Matthews. Either way, look, Look, barring some cataclysmic sign of the apocalypse, it should be Murray versus Bobrovsky. Again, just make sure when Tortorella has his usual 5 or 5:15 or 5:30 powwow with the media, that he does confirm Bobrovsky. So I would wait until then just in case. Look, Columbus's power play is about as good as rat excrement. And that's being pretty kind. Actually, during this game, it has dipped back under 10%. I know. Yeah, 9.8%, guys. Ouch. Pittsburgh, by contrast, is 25.8% at home. They've had their own issues, obviously. They've lost four of the. I still look at the numbers, guys, and it's amazing to see, expected goals for in Pittsburgh that low. I mean, it just there's just something that doesn't belong there. Again, Columbus isn't much better. They've only gone 3-3 in their last six. They still allowed over 3 goals a game in that span. They allow 3.2 goals a game on the road. Their lines generally, other than the top line, get cratered pretty heavily by Pittsburgh in matchups past. No Brandon Dubinsky, obviously, has a broken orbital bone in his eye. So I have no clue who they're going to use this shadow Sidney Crosby, if they're even going to be able to, which adds, obviously, another wrinkle to this and has lent some early credence to a potential double center stack. Simple question is, Mike, Pittsburgh's going to be high owned. Does this flop back to Pittsburgh too, or does Pittsburgh one still ca Crosby still carry the ownership for the night?
I mean, I'll probably lean to the top line here, and the reason being is Dominic Simone looks like he's going to line up. I'm on the top line with Crosby, Gensel. And Dominic Simone, if you look at his DraftKings price, I think he's 2,800. So,
Yep.
it's not like you're using Connor Sheary, who Sherry, sorry,
Yeah, it's a
who's
tough one.
been hovering he's been hovering around 5K or more all season, or using Hornqvist, who's 55, 6,000 or whatever. I'll probably just lean to that top line. I mean, when I first saw this game, I immediately got interested in Columbus because I knew that they would be low owned. Now, the problem here is as we saw tonight in Wednesday night's game, Columbus is going to screw with their lines. Tortorella has been doing this all season. The only line over the last month or so that he's really kept together is Panarin, Dubois, and Anderson. He's even broken them up at sometimes. I mean, they had a morning skate today, and they had set lines, and he completely changed them after the first shift of the game. So he's obviously just doing it to screw with the other team, but that screws with us. So we have no idea what the Columbus lines are going to be. So I don't know how you can possibly use them. I mean, if Werenski's still out, Marcus Nudibara got some second-unit power play time, should see a few increased minutes. Same thing with David Tavares. If you want to use maybe a punt Columbus defenseman, I can see that. Outside of the Anderson line, I don't know how you can stack anyone, and stacking a team playing back-to-back on the road, I don't see the upside in doing it. So for me, I'd just go to that Pittsburgh top line, Crosby, Gensel, Simone. Hope Simone stays on that top line all game, because I could envision a thousand different scenarios where he's down on the fourth line by the end of the first period, but that's kind of the risk you take. And at 2,800, it's not a bad risk. I don't know how much ownership I'm going to have of them just because it is Bobrovsky. Maybe he's playing injured, maybe he's not, but he's still one of the best goalies in the league. So I think my initial lead would be the Pittsburgh top line, but this might be another case where if I don't have it, like Boston, where if I don't have a share of that top line, I probably won't have anything else in the game.
Yeah, I mean, on the Columbus side, I'm I'm largely going to be passing here. On the Pittsburgh side, honestly, I don't think I can give you like a good assessment of where I'm at with them in tournaments, because I just don't know what their lines are going to be. I'm not trying to sound like it's not like a cop out answer. It's just like there could be different configurations come morning skate. Patrick Hornqvist looks like he's going to be a game time decision. We don't know where Simone is going to be. I believe he missed Monday's game with an illness. I would think he'd be ready to go tomorrow, but like we just don't know on some of these guys, and so we're probably going to get some line changes there. But if you want to play like the if game, so if Simone is in the top line, then yeah, you know, with him being a viable source of salary relief playing next to Crosby and Gensel, then I can totally understand it, because it's going to drive the average cost of the stack down considerably. So, I definitely have interest there. If Malkin and Hornqvist can kind of stick together, I would also have some interest there. But, you know, as you can tell, I'm just not sure on these things. The one play that I usually like with Pittsburgh is just Chris Letang. And I think whether you use him as a one-off in a tournament or whether you want to use him in cash games, I think he's kind of like the more consistent guy, that you know what his role is going to be, you know where the minutes are going to be. And so as a result, he's usually like the guy I lean towards when Pittsburgh has, you know, a good implied total, a good matchup, a home matchup, and kind of all those things check the box for Letang tomorrow night. So I'm definitely interested in him in all formats. And one more thing I wanted to say is, I'm a little bit surprised that Columbus defensively, you know, it felt like in the beginning of the year, they started off really well, or at least middle of the pack, in a lot of the five-on-five metrics defensively that I was looking at. But now, in terms of expected goals against per 60, they're down to seventh worst on five-on-five. And so it's a team that I usually give credit to defensively, but it seems like they're starting to slip, and Bobrovsky has not been himself of late, whether that be because he's hurt or whatever. He just has not performed the way that he was performing towards the beginning of the year. So this is, in my opinion, a really good matchup for Pittsburgh, and you're going to get Columbus on the second night of a back-to-back. So on the whole, it's a really good context. I would just say check back on the morning skate to kind of see how the line shook out.
Yeah, just wait and pray. All right, guys, here it comes. The fastest game preview we've ever done here on Fantasy Hockey X. I'm being mean, and I'm hitting the executive red button for this only. The New York Rangers and their 13,000 fans travel to New Jersey to face the Devils tomorrow night. Yeah, that's right. It'll literally be like 75 to 80% blue, because they're too cheap to get tickets in their own arena, because the prices are literally $200 to $300 a seat. Don't ask how I know. I just do. By the way, the starting price tomorrow night now, because of all this buying of tickets, is up to $135 a seat, which is literally 2.5 times the amount that it would be if you want to go see Patrick Kane against the Devils on Saturday night. Yeah, that's right. $54 will get you in the door, even at a resale price on Saturday. $135 on Thursday. The reasons are simple. Look, let's be honest. The Metro Division is absolutely jammed. Completely jammed. No other way to put it. These two teams, by the way, are hysterically identical on their overall numbers. It's really eerie and weird. The Rangers obviously average a little bit more in the goals per game department, allow a hair less in the goals against, but it's basically more or less the same. If you take a 10 to 15 game rolling average of late, it's about kind of even. Power play and penalty kill are actually very eerily similar. Again, a few tenths of a percentage is not much of a difference at all. Their record over the last five games is just about the same. The only difference is in the last five games, like I said, rolling average again. New Jersey scored a little more. They've allowed a little bit more, which is kind of typical. The Rangers aren't as good on the road, and people know that. The one thing that also I'd like to point out, the Rangers have played 22 games at home. 22. If anybody wants to know why the Rangers have the record they do, it perhaps maybe because they played that many goddamn times at home already. How it goes. Okay. The over-under is 5.5 from Vegas. It should be. There's absolutely no reason why that should change. Make this very simple tomorrow night. The Devils are going to predictably pepper Lundqvist with a lot of shots. They don't have Adam Henrique to score that magical goal anymore. And the second line of New Jersey with Travis Zajac absolutely sucks donkey. Yeah. Whatever. Poop, crap. Yeah. It's bad. Whatever line Alain Vigneault manages the matchup against that line, you will want to use and pick on them feverishly. Or, you want to be a little riskier, but it can work the same, go up against the Hall and his sheer line. Because the last few games, they have been rather porous defensively. So, if you want to take New York Rangers 1 tomorrow, or even New York Rangers Power Play 1, and just stack the living daylights out of it, go right ahead. If you want to mix and match with the Devils and wait to see what John Hines is going to do with the first line, now that Johansson is playing tomorrow, and they have a relatively healthy lineup, you can do that too. Maybe you roster John Moore. Maybe you roster Will Butcher. You know, you throw one off from one of the Devils forwards. But the main play is probably from the Rangers. Either take Rangers 1 or Rangers Power Play 1. If you're feeling frisky and you just want to do a one-off, take Jesper Fast or Michael Grabner and call it a day. All right, next game. The Ottawa Senators, who, holy crap, blew a 3-1 lead to the Minnesota Wild in a way that nobody ever could have expected. Travel to Tampa Bay to face one ticked-off Tampa Bay team who lost very late to Vegas, and some will say in a controversial manner. I didn't see the fallout from the goal. I just saw the fact that Shea Theodore got me two extra points on DraftKings at the last minute and pushed my bottom line up a little. I'm not going to lie there. Oh, and that Marcia show got me a power play goal. Marcia. Funny, goofy things about this game, guys. The penalty kills are crap. And they've been crap over the last 10 to 15 games. Not much has changed. Tampa Bay has scored exactly 64 goals at home, guys. Which, I'm not a math major, but that works out to exactly 4 goals a game. Which is also what they've scored over the last 5 games. Ottawa's allowed 16 goals over the last 5 games, and that includes a shutout against some team outdoors. There's a lot of ugly numbers here. Ottawa is an absolute dumpster fire in every way right now. No one likes the owner. Some of the players don't like the coaching staff. Matt Duchene has literally brought whatever malaise he had in Colorado last year over to Ottawa. There's really, sometimes you just wonder what explanation there isn't. As much as I want to try and play Tampa Bay 1, there is one caveat I want to throw out there before I turn it over to Mike. There are at least 6 or 7 players right now from Tampa that have the flu. I believe that all of them are at least good enough to play tomorrow. Whether they're 100% is anybody's guess. So the best bet is literally wait until morning skate and see who washed their hands. And I'm not joking, only because, look, it killed people last night because Stamkos had the flu. Obviously, Johnson and Dotchin both had the flu. Sergachev had the flu. Trying to think of who else they said was definitely, you could tell, was under, under the weather. Even Palat and Killorn appeared to definitely be a little slower than usual. So, and there was a few other players as well. So, the simple question is this a night, Mike, where I sit there and I go, as much as I don't want to play Tampa Bay one, I may try it anyway, depending on what lines may come.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem with, you brought up the flu. We got a good old-fashioned post-lock scratch from Tyler Johnson on Tuesday, which that was just wonderful to see. And so that's the problem that we have here, is that it's an 8:30 start. Well, 8:30 for me, 7:30 Eastern, and so on and so forth across
right.
North America. So you might not get, just because the guys are warming up doesn't mean that they're necessarily playing. And this is kind of the conundrum that I'm coming up with here, is that normally when teams have something like this running through them, I usually just fade them. You fade them for about a week. You don't play them for about a week or 10 days or whatever. Especially with Christmas coming up, you'd only have to fade them for two or three more games, and then, they're off, and then they should be fine after that. Now, the problem is that this is about as good as a matchup as it gets. Like you said, Ottawa's just absolutely god awful in all phases of the ring. So you run into the problem of using a really expensive top line, or even a reasonably expensive second line, and you run the risk of having a guy scratched after lock. And even if you get the scratch before lock, four other games have already started. So then you're whittling down your pool even more. And then, maybe it's like last night, if you knew of Tyler Johnson beforehand, you could just use Yanni Gord. But then, if that doesn't come up till after lock, there's just nothing you can do. So it's kind of that. Normally I would just fade this. I would say enough is enough and just fade the team, and then whatever may come, but it's just too good of a matchup to ignore. So I think I'm just going to stack the top line and call it a day and hope it works out. I mean, if you look at other games going on later in the night, you have Edmonton, you have St. Louis, I mean, to a degree anyways. You have Chicago and Dallas. So you have the Joker line back together for Nashville. So, if you do use the top line and then, warm-ups hit and all of a sudden, Kucherov isn't playing or something like that, well, you do have options to move off of it. So I think that's kind of the approach I'm going to take here, is I'm going to make lineups with that top line. And I know they're going to be chalky, but there are good secondary stats that I like elsewhere that I think you could use. So I think I'm going to roster the top line. And then if they're playing, if it does look like everybody's in, I'm just going to go with it. If somebody doesn't take warm up or they get scratched, at the last minute or whatever, there are options that you can move off of them. So that's kind of the direction that I'm going to go. But, obviously we'll find out a lot more as morning skates it, as the day goes on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to add anything else to what Mike said there with Tampa Bay. If they're good to go, as good a matchup as you can get here against Ottawa at home, with Ottawa just being dysfunctional right now and playing so poorly defensively, it's a really good spot for Tampa Bay, especially that top line. So if they're good to go, play them. Would be my lean, especially in cash games. I would just want to grab at least one of those studs, whether it be Stamkos or Kucherov. But honestly, in this matchup, I think I would want both, really. But on the other side here, I just wanted to add a little bit of more color. I think Erik Karlsson and Hoffman continue to be in play, whether you use them as a one-off or as kind of a mini stack of those two, I think it works out fine because they both see the top power play minutes. And Karlsson of late, you know, the minutes are you know, starting to get to the Karlsson level that we know and love. 29, 29, 32, and 30 over the last four. So, you know, the playing time is clearly there. And for a player with already a really high built-in floor, you know, if you catch him on a night where he's generating points, then that's where the ceiling comes. So he's $6,100. That's not a correct price tag for him individually. And Mike Hoffman is just $5,200. And I also don't believe that to be a correct price tag. With Hoffman, you always get a really secure floor on the shots because he shoots the puck so much. He's at 112 shots on goal this year on 32 games. Last year, it was more of the same. So at $5,200, you know, I'd be inclined to use here, whether it be in a cash or a GPP format. Of course, with Ottawa, their lines are usually screwy. So I'm more tempted to just kind of go with those two guys in a road matchup.
Yeah, not a bad option indeed. All right, we're gonna steamroll this along, even though there's a lot of good matchups ahead. Carolina travels to Nashville to face the Nashville Predators. Okay, everybody, it's time to step into the classroom and give much praise to Nashville's second line, which really is their primary scoring threat right now. Never would I have thought that in a month of Sundays that Kevin Fiala in the last 15 games has 15 frickin' points. But here we are. Kyle Turris is right around the same point production. Craig Smith is following along a little less. But still, at the very least, the left-wing center mini-stack from Nashville Line 2 has been an excellent play for about a month now. It's not that Nashville 1 has been awful. It's just it hasn't been quite as good, obviously. The Predators' power play, which I never thought I would say this, guys, is at clicking at nearly 27% on the season now. And that's without Ryan Ellis. I got to scratch my head a little here. But I got to give a ton of credit to where it's due. Obviously, Nashville 11-3-2 at home. They scored over about 3.75 goals a game. They do allow a lot of goals at home, though. As we saw the other night against Winnipeg, they gave up 6. That's bumped their average up back over 3 goals a game again, which I'm not entirely shocked by. That's kind of how Nashville plays. Even though overall in the last 5 they've been rather stingy, they still do have the occasion of giving up a good amount of goals to a quality team. Enter the Carolina Hurricanes into the mix. The Hurricanes guys have come back to their road woe reality over the last few games. For a while there, they were only giving up about 2.6 goals a game on the road, which is damn good compared to what Carolina did in previous years. They're now back up over 3.25. You know, came with an awful power play despite generating top 10 scoring chances for 60 on the power play. And a penalty kill that's getting worse. I didn't realize this, but Carolina's power play has almost dipped down to right near 75%. Their 12-game rolling average, guys, is 71.7%. So... oh, boy. I mean, look, you know, there's some Carolina plays out there and such, but the obvious question, Mike, is there a chance of a Forsberg Thursday?
I mean, you're dead on with your assessment of the Nashville second line. They've just been unreal pretty much since the day Turris stepped on the ice for them. For me, this is about the top line. You alluded to how bad the Carolina penalty kill is. Now, whether it's the actual penalty kill or the goaltending, Kind of like their goaltending's been their problem at 5-on-5 as well. I'll leave that up. But I definitely want a piece of that top power play. Honestly, considering what Carolina did on Tuesday, getting lambasted, I could see a ton of ownership on the Nashville top line here. I think there are three major spots tonight where you're going to see some heavy ownership. It's the Islanders, it's Tampa, and it's Nashville. I mean, you'll see some on Los Angeles as well, but I think pretty much those three. So if you want to fade, that's fine. One line that's sticking out to me, and it's kind of one of the secondary stacks that I like, is the Carolina top line. I know that going into Nashville hasn't been typically a great matchup, but for me, it's twofold, really. One is Nashville takes a shitload of penalties. I mean, they're first in the league at power play opportunities given. I think they're at 4.24 per game, and they're the only team over four. The next closest is at like 3.9. Like, they're way, way ahead. They're by far the most undisciplined team. So, you know, if Carolina does anything in this game, perhaps it's through their power play. Jordan Staal and Justin Williams are both on the top power play unit. They're playing a 5-on-5 with Brock McGinn, and I couldn't believe this. I was researching something else today, and and his name popped up. You know, he's ninth amongst all forwards in the NHL in shot attempts per minute at 5-on-5? Brock McGinn. He's sandwiched between Alex Ovechkin and Tyler Toffoli. It's absolutely insane.
Wow.
Yeah, I honestly did not realize that either. So if you look at that top line stack, you're looking at about 4K for Williams. You're looking at, sorry, I was just pulling it up, 5,100 for Staal, and McGinn is near min price as well. Well, not min price, but you know what I mean. He's pretty cheap. So you can stack the three of them for about 12K, and that's the kind of stack you need if you want to fit in something else super expensive, like the Tampa Bay top line. And then you have Noah Hanifin, who's now running the top power play, and he's only like 3,600. So you can get a good four-man stack on DK for about 15 or 16,000, and that's the kind of stack that allows you to get that Tampa Bay top line in. So where Staal and Williams are both playing top power play unit, you can add in Hanifin for so cheap. I think if Carolina has success in this game, it'll be through that power play. So obviously, while there'll be a ton of ownership on Nashville, it's the Carolina top line for me that I think I'll probably have the most exposure to out of this game.
Yeah, Mike, I don't think that's in terms of mass multi-entry, I don't think that is a bad angle. Because I just would expect very little ownership.
Oh yeah, like I'm not talking about it's not something to do with cash games or something like that. I would never say that, but I'm just definitely talking about GPP.
Yeah, no, certainly. As a mass multi-entry type of play, totally fine with that angle. I also agree with the fact that from an ownership perspective here, it's going to be on Nashville, the home team playing against Carolina. Carolina got just destroyed against the Leafs the other night on the road. You know, with Carolina, I don't think I don't think that their issues are all defensively, because I usually respect them defensively. I think their goaltending continues to be crap once again. And so I think there's going to be a little bit of a disconnect there all season long, once again, with Cam Ward and Scott Darling just not being who I thought he was going to be. I thought he'd be better, quite frankly, but it just has not happened. And I don't have a good history with predicting goalie performance, so there you have it. But I think Nashville is the play here. I think the top line, now that they've kind of all been reunited, Johansson, Forsberg, Arvidsson, that's where I would go in both cash games and GPPs. But they're gonna be popular. The thing is, this slate, it's 10 games. with a decent amount of good spots out there. So maybe in this slate, popular for that line would be something like, you know, 12-15% in a GPP. It's not, I don't think it's going to get anything more extensive than that. So I think they're squarely in play here. I don't mind grabbing a couple of those guys in cash games either. But if I'm going to grab some Tampa Bay guys in this slate in cash games, then I most certainly will. I would think that I'm going to need more salary relief than what the Nashville first line affords me. So I might grab one of the guys, not two. I think PK Subban is also squarely in play, of course. I still think that he's underpriced at $5,300. So I think pretty clearly to me, the Nashville side is the better one here in both cash and GPPs.
Yeah, it's probably one of the runaway plays, if not the runaway play of the night, at least arguably on the surface. All right. Next up, the Chicago Blackhawks travel to Dallas to face the Dallas Stars. Oh, boy. Oh, kids. Brace for impact. Obviously, Chicago has managed to win five straight in a variety of ways. Their power play is poop. There's no other way to put it. But they seem to be doing everything else just well enough, and Corey Crawford saves their butt on a nightly basis. Blackhawks, by the way, have only allowed 7 goals over the last 5 games. They've scored 18. And like I said, in a lot of different ways. When Tommy Winkle scores a shorthanded game-winning goal, you know you're having a pretty darn lucky streak, at least. One thing you will not have to worry about in this game is Duncan Keith scoring a goal, and that is because Duncan Keith has no goals on the season, and he isn't going to score until Saturday against New Jersey. Just a bold prediction we're making on the show that if we somehow get right, we won't pat ourselves on the back. Again, Dallas will probably go... All right, it's Ken Hitchcock. Your guess is as good as mine as to if they go with the 3-line spread out plan or if they do try to go with Bennigan's and Devin Shore. Guess is as good as mine there. Either way... Dallas's power play over the last month is under 15%. It's why their power play has dropped all the way down below 20% on the year. Despite this, they're still winning, sort of. I mean, it's a weird sort of hodgepodge. You know, when you lose 2 games in overtime the way they did, especially the game against the Capitals, where Dmitry Orlov literally trucked the entire frickin' Dallas defense. There are some concerns, and you know Chicago does have players like Alex DeBrincat who could potentially do that. This game is a mixed bag, guys. There's a lot of ways that you can definitely go. None of them include either power play, however. So, Chris, really quick, is there something I should be looking at that maybe I'm missing in this one?
Sure, I'll make it quick. I don't want to pick on Dallas at home this year. They're improved defensively. Their penalty kill has been great. They're getting, you know, better goaltending this year because of the addition of Ben Bishop. Chicago has Corey Crawford in net. And so, as you mentioned, he's just been outstanding and saved them consistently. I'm inclined to pull a full game fade here. I certainly am not interested in cash games. In GPPs, Dallas top line because of all those members being on the same power play unit and those names being Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn, you know, instantly you have a little bit of appeal there in GPP. But that's about it. I think the matchup is not favorable and not conducive towards DFS success. And so for me, I'm fading in cash, GPP, a little bit of interest on the Dallas side, mostly.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Chris here, where I'm probably just going to fade this entire game. The one thing I will say, and one thing that did stick out to me, and it's one of those lines that I talked about you might need to use if you're stacking the Tampa Bay top line, you're going to need to go really, really cheap. And that's the Chicago third line. It has right now, it has Panic, Hinostroza, and Ryan Hartman. Panic had been scratched for a few games, and honestly, I don't know why. You know, he did go into a bit of a cold streak. Alex DeBrincat did emerge, so, you know, he kind of took a spot on the top line, but it's not like Panic should have been outright scratched. He's actually had a good season by some underlying metrics. He's a good offensive player. Ryan Hartman he's a volume shooter. He's a shooter. That's what he is. You know, I've talked about him before on this podcast. I've written about him before. He's just a shooter. Vinny Hinostroza had a really good year to start in the AHL. He deserved his call-up. And if you look at their prices, you could stack the three of them, I think, for under 10K total. And if you want to attack Dallas, the way you want to do it is you need to get into the third and fourth lines. You need to get up against that third defense pairing. And I think that's what that Chicago third line will end up doing. They're probably not going to get a ton of ice time. You know, maybe they only get 13 or 14 minutes or something like that. But really, if you can get one full goal from them, that's, you know, I don't want to say that's all you need, but at least it won't kill you in GPPs. And if you get two, you're just laughing. Yeah, I really, really like the composition of that third line. I like how cheap they are and how it helps fit in Tampa. So I think that's probably going to be the only exposure I have in the team.
Yeah, that's something that definitely has to at least be explored, is the third line. And I would even go as far as, if, God forbid, you know, Radek Faksa, whichever freaking line he winds up on, will probably score tomorrow. Just because. I mean, it's that point. The Hitchcock burial of guys like Faksa is just disturbing, to say the least. But I would at least look to see where he is. If he's on the third line and somehow he's with Yanmark, I would give it at least a little bit of a roll of the dice there as well, because it's going to be pretty darn cheap. All right. Oh boy. The St. Louis Blues, who got off to a weird start tonight, after their epic battle of Calgary, they go right on over into Edmonton and continue their Northwest Passage road trip, facing the Oilers. Look, the Oilers have actually looked a hair better in the last couple games. Winning both of them kind of helps along the way. St. Louis, guys, pace-wise, has dropped dramatically over the last five or six games. So much so that their pace is on the level of, say, Buffalo or Vancouver. Yeah, it's that low. They've scored just six goals in their last five games. The under is hit in every single one of them. You know, it's not a perfect stat, but you get the idea. And these are two pretty average power plays right now as well, with St. Louis and Edmonton. One thing I do want to touch on, the annual Mark Letestu heater is in full swing. Take advantage of it while you can. It is not going to last much longer. This happens at least every year, and sometimes semi-annually, so twice a year, or twice a season. But, look, you know, I think 9 points in his last 10 games or something like that, guys. He's right around a point a game. And he's played pretty well. You know, he's still reasonably priced. It's not like somebody else that we're going to get into later that have one of the most hysterical price discrepancies in DraftKings FanDuel's history on Thursday night. So, the question is, Mike, do I play Cam Talbot tomorrow?
I mean, I'm probably not. Like you said, St. Louis had some tough time generating offense lately. I worry about shot volume there. One thing to note in this game is that it looks like Andre Sequeira is going to make his return. Oscar Plefbaum obviously went on the injured reserve. Sequeira coming back from an ACL tear. It'll be his first game back. Now he's slated to start on the third pairing, but he's going to get top power play minutes, and he's min priced on FanDuel. So if you need a min priced defenseman on FanDuel, Sequeira is probably the way to go. For me, I'm definitely going to be fading St. Louis. I mean, back to back on the road, that's a pretty easy call for me to make, especially with the way they've been playing. For me, it'll be the Edmonton top line. I don't really like having Lucic on there, but if you look at how that line of Lucic, McDavid, and Puljujärvi has performed, I mean, they've just been outstanding by almost any metric you want to use. So I don't really want to use Nugent Hopkins. I mean, you can use Draisaitl as a one-off if you want, just because of the power play time or whatever. That's fine. But I'm not going to start digging into Ryan Strom or Drake the Jeweler or anything like that. For me, it'll probably just be a full top line stack. McDavid, Puljujärvi, Lucic, and Sequeira. I mean, he's more expensive on DK. I think 4,000 or 4,100. But on FanDuel at 3,500, you can't beat top line PP minutes for that price. So that's the direction I'm going to go here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really, for the sake of brevity, like, I don't really have much to add to what Mike said there. I'm fading St. Louis, going into Edmonton back-to-back, yeah, for sure, fading that side. Edmonton, a little bit of interest on the top line, as Mike mentioned there. Pretty reasonable price tags with Lucic and Puljujärvi, so, like, cheap on DraftKings. I shouldn't say so cheap. I mean, they are 5K and 4,600 respectively, but, you know, it kind of helps drive down the average cost of the stack. So I like it from that perspective because they're skating with McDavid, and McDavid is an animal, and he'll probably be one of our top projected scorers tomorrow in our projections. That's even in a tough matchup, that's absolutely going to happen. But given that it is a tough matchup, I also don't think this is a core play for me in GPP. Mostly a secondary one. So, you know, if I'm building three teams, I'm probably not going to have Edmonton. But I do think that they're in play. They're just not core targets for me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, aside from the, you know, obvious jokes of, oh, you know, Lucas is this, Lucas is that. You know, he's actually going to somehow, at the end of the season, probably be right around his season averages. Maybe even slightly more, which is just, it just seems weird given how poorly this team started, but yet, you know, it's like the damn butterflies at San Juan Capistrano. They just come every year anyway. Much the same with Lucic. Somehow the production gets there, even if it's not like in the glory days of Boston. So, all right. Speaking of layup matchups, maybe. Keyword, maybe. The Colorado Avalanche come into L.A. to face the Los Angeles Kings. Something that we touched on the show quite a few times was the L.A. Kings' dangerous penalty kill actually possibly slowly imploding. It's funny, Mike, how many times that you've mentioned this. And every time on the Kings broadcast, even the last week against the Devils, it was mentioned because I was in the press box when they were literally talking about it. And it was nice to be able to actually talk to Jim Fox and basically say to him in so many words, guys, do you realize your power play is like about 71% this month? And he's like, oh, let me add that in. It's a pretty funny moment. But regardless, don't look at the season number of 86.6% because a lot of people still do. That number is in the 70s for about the last month, guys. So, you know, it is a little misleading. And the only reason why that number is as high as it is probably because of Jonathan Quick, who's still just been ridiculous in net. Obviously, he stole a win the other night. LA's stingy as anything at home, only allowed 2.25 goals a game. They scored almost three. Marrying Gabrick's been a nice story, while we're still waiting for Jeff Carter to get back someday, hopefully soon. But so strange interest may be Colorado guys. Colorado's not bad. I know they're 500 basically, an almost true NHL 500 at that, because they're one of the few teams that doesn't lose in overtime or shootout all that often, only twice all year. The other thing is, it looks like a really appetizing matchup on the surface because they do allow 3.6 goals a game on the road, and they only score about 2.7. At the same time, that first Nashville line has been really good, and Tyson Barrie has been something else this year. We've been talked about it with Mike. I've talked about it with Neil Parker. I've talked about it with Stephen Laidlaw, and we've all said the same thing. Barrie is a completely different player this year. He looks much better. He looks much more sure of himself. It's like whatever happened last year, whether you want to call it the Duchesne effect, the Tidy Bowl effect, the oh my God, they just suck effect, is gone. At least enough so that some of these players are finally starting to do what they're supposed to do, including even Gabriel Landeskog, who's been excellent now. Rolling averages for the past half dozen games or so. Chris, I'll ask you first. Is there any possible Colorado contrarian plays you may have for Thursday night?
Oh, man. Going into LA, that is a tough ask, okay? Maybe Comfer, because he's 3,300 and sees so much ice time. I could get that as a one-off. I could get behind that. Barrie still has a very respectable price tag on DraftKings at 4,400. I don't think Eric Johnson is going to be playing this one because he's still suspended for two games. So I think this would be his second. I don't have a hot take there, but I think Barrie is fine once again. Not like a primary play by any means. I just think, going into LA is a really tough, it's a really tough matchup and context. And so I'm probably going to be on the fade side on the Colorado side here. On the Los Angeles side, I do have interest. I do have interest on the second line of Toffoli, Kempe, Pearson. I still think they're very reasonably priced. We've mentioned in this slate that Tampa is in a really good spot. There are other top lines that you might want to reach up for, and I think this LA second line is going to have good micro matchups, and they're kind of cheap, so I can get behind them. If you wanted to pay up for Kopitar or Dustin Brown in a GPP, I don't see anything wrong with that either. I also think that Alec Martinez continues to be underpriced, but I always say that on the podcast because, he just doesn't even crack $4,000 on DraftKings nowadays. Coming off a game where he played 27 minutes, he's just $3,800. So, if you want to go that route in cash games, I could get behind it too. So to answer your question specifically, though, I don't think I can get behind Colorado in this particular context.
Yeah, I'll agree with Pacheco in this regard, is that this matchup is brutal. When you go into Los Angeles as a top line, you're going to see a boatload of Kopitar and Doughty, and that's pretty much where offense goes to die. What I will say is this, is that MacKinnon, Landeskog, and Rantanen are probably going to play about 20 minutes. Now, that's a lot of ice time. And on top of that, they're not priced as a true top line. Like, if you look at other top lines, like if you look at Boston's top line or the Islanders' top line or something like that, you're going to pay about $20K. That the Colorado top line is actually at about 16. So the argument here would be that you can get a line, you can get a top line, you can get McKinnon, Landeskog, Rantanen, and you can get a top line, a very good top line, that is probably going to play about 20 minutes. And you, if you use a cheap goalie, like if you use Varlamov or if you use Gibson or if you use Hellebuck or something like that, you know, not one of the 8K goalies, but somebody in the 7,000 to 7,200 range. If you use one of those goalies, you can fit in the Colorado top line with other top lines like Boston or the Islanders or Nashville or something like that. And that's not something you can do too often. So that would be the argument for using them. Now, like I said, I think it's a brutal matchup, so I will probably fade, but I understand the thought process behind it because you're going to get them at under 5% playing 20 minutes. Now, anytime you can get almost any top line at that ownership, that at that price, don't forget, that's kind of the argument here, is that it allows you the flexibility to use other elite top lines like Nashville, like Boston, like the Islanders. I can understand the argument for doing it. I just don't know if I'm going to do it myself. So I'm going to have to think about it on it a little bit more. Maybe the low ownership and the lineup flexibility will be worth it. I just don't know yet. I do think that this is a game that's built for that Los Angeles second line. So that's the one thing that jumped out to me as well, is Kempe, Pearson, Toffoli, especially in cash games. That's what jumped out to me initially. But I definitely do see the argument for using that Colorado top line.
Okay, and now the featured heartbreak of the night.
Fade. I'm just telling you right now, I'm just fading that game. So you guys can work this game out between yourselves.
Okay. Holy shit, my throat. We got into the final game of the night, and yeah, my throat is completely shot. Okay, here we go. People are going to get drawn into this so badly, and I'm going to try and say this with a straight face. Vancouver has given up, this is not a misprint, 28 goals over the last 5 games, including 7 last night to frickin' Montreal. By the way, Mike, ruined my goddamn frickin' perfect GPP play because they gave up 5 goals. Yeah, that one hurt. Not going to lie. That being said, it's frickin' San Jose, people. And yes, Brent Burns has finally dug himself out of the trash heap to respectability. And has done well. Joe Pavelski's starting to come back. Et cetera, et cetera. No, Lance Couture's still out with a concussion. Yes, it's a concussion, people. You can say head injury all you want. Goddamn concussion. The bottom line is San Jose still at home. Their record is kind of backwards. For what it's worth, you know, San Jose has given up 15 goals over the last 5 games. To try and guess who is going to freaking score from either one of these teams is like taking a series of darts and throwing them blind all over a room. I rarely say this. Fade! Just fade, please. Mr. Pacheco, we turn to you.
Oh, you're going to hit the trifecta with me here, because I'm certainly on the fade side here. Typically, teams going into San Jose, it's not great for fantasy production. And the team that's coming into town, it's not like Pittsburgh or, you know, Tampa, it's Vancouver. No thanks. Not interested there, especially after they scored all those goals you know, maybe there's going to be a little bit of point chasing there. I'm not interested in going in that direction. On the San Jose side, maybe Brent Burns, because he's just Brent Burns, and you know, the floor ceiling combination that he brings to the table as a stud, you know, it's unrivaled. And so from that perspective, I get it. If you wanted to play him in cash games, you know, totally fine with that. Really, I don't have an issue there. Not even in GPPs as a one-off, no problem there. I do have more interest on other studs tonight than Burns, but Burns is just a higher floor player of the studs that I even like tonight. So, you know, keep that in mind. But in terms of stacking San Jose, I'm passing, and I'm passing on Vancouver. I also don't have much interest on the goaltending here. Because Martin Jones does feel like he's priced appropriately over on DraftKings. He's 8,100. You know, in Vancouver, typically he's not a team that is going to give you a lot of shot volume. So you're basically relying on a highly efficient night out of them. And so I'm going to pass on him as well. So I think this game altogether has the fade blessing for me outside of maybe Brent Burns.
Yeah, the only other thing that I would maybe consider is depending on maybe playing, say, Daniel Sedin on DraftKings, because his FanDuel price is outrageous. On Tuesday night, guys, Daniel Sedin was 5,800 on FanDuel. He was only 3,800 on DraftKings. One of the highest discrepancies I've seen all year. It's definitely up there, at least for percent per dollar. You know, that's 50. That's 52% difference between the two sites. And when you adjust it for FanDuel pricing, it's still 40-something percent. That's just an outrageous number. All right, we have managed to get through the 10-game slate. On behalf of Mike and Chris and myself, we want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas because, well, when we come back next week, it'll be gone. And there'll probably be snow on the ground here, but not in Florida. Sorry, Chris.
No, not in Florida.
just not going to happen. You know, special thanks to all the listeners. And all the people that follow us on Twitter that make this possible, I want to wish a Merry Christmas to them and a Happy Holidays as well. Most importantly, the one thing I can say, just from personal experience, no freaking drink and drive this weekend, seriously. Not worth it. Cops are going to be out like crazy all weekend and into early next week, and it's just something that you don't want to do. Again, you can find the show, as always, on iTunes, probably by the morning. At least that's what, you know, we're usually told. And, you know, for me as a personal side to the guys, thank you for putting up with my lousy, stinking, freaking crackling voice of death tonight.
Because I can tell you, don't forget that.
Yeah, it freaking hurts. I can tell you that. You know, having your left elbow pressed against your chest so you can just eke out your voice is pretty bad. That being said, good luck tomorrow, everybody, in your daily fantasy leagues. I will have something of NHL power plays on Saturday. It will be shorter than usual because yes, I'm going to the game, Devils game for once. As a mild-mannered fan, maybe not so mild-mannered. Either way, again, Merry Christmas to everybody. And you know what? And to all, a good night.